Longtime Bloomington journalist and author Doug Wissing has been described as an adventurer. His three tours as an embedded reporter in Afghanistan have provided him with more than enough adventures to last a lifetime. He's described what he's seen in two books on America's 16-year battle in history's chronic battleground. His latest book, Hopeless But Optimistic, Journeying Through America's Endless War in Afghanistan, is in bookstores now. He speaks about the war as he joins Michael Glab in this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk, Michael Glab here, and I'm happy to have in the studio Douglas Wissing. He's a journalist and author. Doug, thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mike.
You have been described as an adventurer.
Well, I don't know about that.
You've done fascinating things, and one of the most fascinating things is your time embedded in Afghanistan with the U.S. Army.
I went out there three times and embedded with different army units around the east and south of Afghanistan where the insurgency is raging. And I've spent a fair amount of time in the Pashtun regions prior to 9/11, so I had some sense of the Pashtun people who are the insurgent group in Afghanistan, primarily that they comprise the Taliban. So I had some sense of those folks before the war started in 2001. I had run across an army team, what are called farmer soldiers. They were agribusiness development team that were comprised of National Guardsmen who were going out to Afghanistan to do development work, win hearts and minds, or WAM in the military acronym.
Right.
They were doing WAM work, trying to convince Pashtun farmers up in the mountains in Taliban country that they should ally with the Afghan government, the U.S.-supported Afghan government, by doing development work. And these teams were comprised of about 65 soldiers, generally elite soldiers that were both military people and agricultural specialists. And they were unique in the Afghanistan war because they were development teams that had their own security. So they had their own armored vehicles. They had their own security teams. They could go out whenever they wanted. So 90% of the American soldiers never leave the bases, never break the wire.
Right.
The agribusiness development teams did just the opposite. They did hundreds of missions out into Afghanistan. I embedded with a number of those teams from different states, three different times, and they were strategically positioned through the war zones. So because they were doing development, because they were involved with combat missions, because they had to then coordinate with all the combat teams, because they were involved with the Afghan government, because they were essentially negotiating with the Taliban shadow government out in the villages to do the development projects, you saw every aspect of the war in Afghanistan, including what's called the civ-mil combinations, the military-civilian combination. So there were frontline diplomats out there. And you got to see all of that. It was a great lens to look at the entire war. And it was why I stuck with those teams.
So here's a population of people that's fairly isolated. They're living in mountains. They're living in an almost unknown corner of the world, unknown to us here in America. And in come strangers trying to tell them what to do. How does that work?
Well, if you can imagine, you're in a convoy of armored vehicles, typically a minimum of five. So these are kind of rolling bank vaults, grinding up these switchbacks into these essentially 13th century villages. And the security soldiers get out. You have to, your security platoon gets out first, and they're dressed in 50 pounds of body armor. They're carrying 75 pounds of weaponry and ammunition. There's machine gunners on top of the armored vehicle. There's going to be an Apache helicopter circling above. And the Afghans come out and they sit down with you under the shura tree, under the meeting tree, the shade tree at the edge of the village. And then these kind of stormtroopers start saying, well, do you want this project? Do you want that? We have this idea. And, you know, with that comes this whole Western expectation of we're going to modernize. We're going to change the way your culture is.
And who wouldn't want that in our view, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes I tell people, well, this would be how it would be. Imagine 8-foot-tall Taliban on armored flying carpets, and they come swooping in and tell all our women to put on burqas.
Wow.
And I'd be thinking the shotguns would be coming out.
Right.
And that's kind of what happens in Afghanistan. The Afghans have a 1,000-year-old warrior culture. They've beaten Alexander the Great. They've beaten Genghis Khan. They've beaten the British 3 times. They sure ran the Russians out. And what we're looking at now is essentially a failed war.
Mm-hmm.
A Kentucky soldier, a sergeant, he said to me, who was on one of these development teams, he said, the Afghans ain't buying what we're selling.
Maybe we're hitting our heads against the brick wall.
People forget that this is still our largest military and development entanglement by far. We've been doing this for 15 years now.
Yes.
The total bill just for Afghanistan, not Iraq, just Afghanistan, is now over $1 trillion. And it's going on. Yet we have failed at our military and diplomatic goals. In Afghanistan, the Taliban has been growing in strength by double-digit numbers every year since at least 2005.
2 books on the blood swamp, the money swamp, that is Afghanistan.
The first book, Funding the Enemy, at the time I was writing that, 2009, 2010, telling people that our counterinsurgency was totally dysfunctional was a pretty radical thing to say.
Right.
It was not a very popular message. And so the only way I could conjure to say that was to go back to my historian training and to use footnotes, thousands of citations in Funding the Enemy to explain in an unassailable way the structure and what was going on. And that worked really well. It had a big impact on policymakers and some of the discussions that we're having now about the failure of those things.
Mm.
I was part of that discussion. With the second book, with Hopeless But Optimistic, Journeying Through America's Endless War in Afghanistan, I wanted to present what it's like to move through a failed war to the broadest possible audience. So I'm proud to say there are no footnotes. And it's basically storytelling. There's these vignettes, these little short chapters of this is what it's like to be here and to see this kind of failure, this kind of waste. And here's some funny things that happen that are maybe black humor, maybe catch 22 kind of humor of how crazy this war is now.
Doug Wissing is a journalist and author. He has brought us vital information about Afghanistan. Doug's latest book is Hopeless But Optimistic. I thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
You can hear that episode and episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glob at WFHB.org.